to assist your body's immune system and uses the ancient powers of clove and myrrh to purify and soothe, aids in healing mouth sores from braces, heals bleeding gums, a natural teeth whitening that works, and eliminates bad breath with regular use. Order online at www.vitamir.com. That's www.vitamir.com or call toll-free 1-888-558-8482. That's 888-558-8482.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70. The number to call in during this live broadcast is 1-800-858-6582. If you have unlimited long distance or are calling from a cell phone, please use our toll number, 1-559-733-5161. That's 1-559-733-5161. Thank you.
Continues on a daily basis in the press, in the major press, and we see hundreds buried in Haiti as death toll hits 1,000. Workers use dump trucks to empty more than 100 bodies into a 14-foot deep hole Wednesday, the first mass grave for more than 1,070 flood victims. The tropical storm Gene, bystanders shrieked, held their noses against the stench, and demanded that officials collect bodies in waterlogged fields. The government late Wednesday said up to 1,250 people were still missing and that the death toll could rise to 2,000 people. And this is from today's paper, The Oklahoman, September 23, 2004. Meteorologists, meanwhile, said Gene could strike the United States by this weekend. They could not tell where, but the National Hurricane Center in Miami, Florida, warned people in the northwest and central Bahamas and along the southeast U.S. coast to beware of dangerous surf and rip currents that Gene could pick up or kick up in coming days. In Genovese, U.N. peacekeepers fired into the air to keep a hungry crowd at bay as aid workers handed out the first food in days for some of this city, which the floods devastated. Residents were growing impatient because of decaying bodies and a lack of food and drinking water. Well, this is the devastation created by weather modification. Is it? Weather modification is a fact and a reality. It's fully documented on AmericanExpose.com and needs more documentation, which can be found, to add to it. But you have more and more refugees. We'll have more and more refugees here as more and more anomalies continue here. This is depressing the economy. The fires with the Global Fire Monitoring Center in the West has been ablaze many times in the past. I call from a long time ago sustainable development population control. And that's what sustainable development is. Population control. Well, a fellow named Mark Watson, markwatson.com, has his dissertation of what is population control, which is any methodology used to control the type, location, and number of people that inhabit the earth. Public debate is strictly limited to, however, to non-coercive means in achieving any one of these goals, especially with regards to population reduction. An important example of this would be allowing people the free choice on procreative matters. By using various methodologies, methodologies both economic and administrative and educational to dissuade people from having more children than needed, a stable population base can be created. It should be noted here that the prevailing viewpoint of the world decision makers is that population control and environmental devastation are linked, and the former contributes heavily to the latter. This view is fundamental to understand the policies that are formulated to combat what is viewed by policymakers as a runaway population explosion. Indeed, when the Nation Intelligence Council, that's the NIC, held their global trade conference, they identified seven key drivers that would shape the globe through the year 2015. The first was demographics. The second was natural resources and environment. These trends are of the utmost importance to understand if we are to understand the motives and policies that are driving the population control agenda. Related terms and policy paradigms and nomenclature are, and I didn't even know this. I really didn't. I just clicked on this. Anyway, they are Sustainable Development, Agenda 21. Desertification Treaty. Ecosystem management, etc. The idea that there are too many people inhabiting the earth is one that is ingrained in the world, the world's leaders, and one that, in their view, requires a solution. The only socially and psychologically solution available to policymakers when discussing reducing the world's population is education. While other methods are debated, they are rarely employed or even discussed with any real publicity. These include various methods of taxation and other forms of financial disincentives. A perfect example of that, people, is the rising cost of gasoline. That's a disincentive to drive. It's already been publicized to us that fuel prices will continue to rise. That's a disincentive to drive. These methods are important to note because, barring success of the educational solution track, the financial and administrative disincentives, will probably become more likely as a method of reducing populations. However, this method is only really available where there is some degree of wealth and a fairly well-developed governmental institution capable of enforcing such a regime. These are the regions that are the primary target of the so-called population control agenda. Remote, poor, economically underdeveloped regions of the world. Thus, if global policymakers are to have any success in their war on population or people, other methods must be employed. So what are we dealing with here? Malthusian maniacs. Malthusian maniacs. Americans have truly been blessed. Many nations on earth do not have enough food to feed their populations. However, recently the ability to increase food production is being hindered by bizarre weather patterns. That's right, by bizarre weather patterns. Well, gee, isn't this ironic? In various regions on Earth, including in America, important food production areas are being challenged with floods. In other places, drought has been a problem. Unfortunately, though, damaging as these natural disasters are, a more troubling danger contributing to world hunger is that of unequal distribution and shortages caused not by lack of supply, but in unsold grain and food stocks that are kept off the market in order to keep the prices of grain high. Far from being a nefarious policy, this is done primarily to keep farmers in business. Despite the many advances, technologically speaking, in agricultural production techniques, hunger on a massive scale still exists in many parts of the world. The intervention of the world's governments and by private institutions has been extensive and commendable. Nevertheless, large pockets of poverty and starvation remain in portions of Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Many of these trends have much of their roots in post-colonial economic and agricultural policies, and others have their roots in mismanagement by many institutions and have ostensibly attempted to alleviate hunger and poverty in these regions. Falling commodity prices in the 1970s and 1980s did not help third world nations whose principal source of hard currency was through these same commodities. Many of these nations also carried largely a foreign debt load. These debts could only be repaid with the earnings collected from those commodities, which were increasingly worthless. In monetary terms, while most of these nations learned to manage their debt to some degree, it often meant decreased living standards for much of the rest of the population in these nations. The lack of a coherent and successful policy in the 1970s and 1980s is leaving increasing problems in Africa in particular, as it is one of the few regions in the world where poverty, epidemics, and ethnic violence are converging on a continent at the same time. Unfortunately, where such misery exists, there are always a few vile men who will attempt to exploit the situation for all it's worth. Even using a starving means need to influence their behavior. Such moral perversity can be found in the United Nations food program. Isn't that amazing? And we've heard this before by Catherine Bertini, Executive Director of the World Food Program of the United Nations. Food is power. We use it to change behavior. Some call it bribery. We do not apologize. The idea in the minds of most people is that the UN is a benevolent organization who wishes only to help the helpless and bring peace to the world. I submit to you that is not true. While in the past the UN has helped some, it usually does so when the bright lights of publicity are shining and the CNN cameras are rolling. In reality, a review of the action of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, and to a lesser degree, the Banks of International Settlements, all of which are associate agencies of the United Nations, have used their money creating authority to loan money to third world nations at interest, ostensibly to help these countries with which needed development. Because these nations have only one thing the West wants, its resources, its natural resources, or commodities. These nations, once they default, become the economic vassals of the IMF and the World Bank. This is one of the reasons there are so many problems in Africa today. Despite the veiled attempts by the national establishment media to portray to the American people that Africa cannot take care of itself, often the real problem is the austerity measures, which frequently take the form of price controls and currency devaluations, which take an enormous toll on the general population in these struggling nations. Often the procrastinations of experts on these economic organizations deliberately overvalue the price of commodities produced by these developing nations, thereby making them eligible for larger loan amounts. It has been argued back and forth by the bank's supporters and detractors whether or not the World Bank is truly a business to help the poor nations out of their poverty, or simply an instrument for the rich nations to plunder the natural resources of the poor nations. It is a debate that will certainly continue, that is, until the remaining portions of the wealth is in the hands of the corporations and money changers. One of the first victims of this unseen war is the children of these nations. As living standards of these already poor nations declines, the children are often forced to work to help make ends meet in these families. Food becomes scarce as social conditions deteriorate. This often adds fuel to the fire of already tense ethnic tensions, with violence the frequent result. The World Bank and the IMF are very much part of the problem in this region of the world. And once again, people, the World Bank and the IMF. This is the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury is the U.S. Governor of the World Bank and the IMF. What is the U.S. Treasury today but a vassal of the International Monetary Fund? What is the Treasury today? A vassal of the Federal Reserve System? International bankers? It's not federal, it's not reserve. What is the proper name for the Federal Reserve? An international banking cartel. The most important reason these nefarious policies can continue is that, first, the mainstream media simply doesn't report the facts to the American people. And secondly, because most Americans are too busy to make more than a cursory look at these institutions and have no desire to look beyond the catch-all phrases to really care. But today we do have some people who are attempting to sound the alarm bells. The turmoil in the Asian markets in late 1997 and 1998 showed an increasing debate as to the role of the international financial institutions. Hopefully the debate will move into directions which will lead to reform of these institutions and a reduction in their role in profiting from human misery. It may also help alleviate the swirling mystery of how these institutions make some bizarre and at times abominable decisions brought on by the World Bank's obsession with secrecy. What are they doing with our taxpayer money? And they don't want anyone to know about. In this day and age, it would seem impossible to imagine a world without the likes of the money changers. However, the use of debt to help out others is not a sound way to help thy neighbor. The use of their people's money to loan out to basket case economies for private profit lends itself to a very dangerous and immoral situation with which the people accept all too willingly, mostly out of abject ignorance. Unfortunately, there seems to be another purpose at the United Nations policymakers, which with a little investigation reveals itself in the oft-repeated slogan of population control. Population control is rooted in the idea that the world's population is increasing too rapidly and is outstripping natural resources. Bear with me. This is the first time I've read this. Honestly, this is the first time I've read this. But I found it. I stuck it in the bookmarks, and I have it for you tonight. Dr. Sam Keen made these remarks. We must speak far more clearly about sexuality, contraception, about abortion, about values that control population, because the ecological crisis, in short, is the population crisis. Cut the population by 90%, and there aren't enough people left to do a great deal of ecological damage. Who is Dr. Sam Keen but a New Age writer at the 1996 Gorbachev Conference in San Francisco? His remarks were received with warm applause by the new intellectuals. How he proposes to do away with 5 billion people was, of course, never discussed. Here's a statement by Alexander King, president of the Club of Rome. My own doubts come when DDT was introduced. In Guyana, within 2 years, it had eliminated malaria. So my chief quarrel with DDT, in hindsight, is that it had greatly added to the population problem. So this statement made by Alexander King, president of the Club of Rome, a think tank for elitist and socialist ideas, which interlocks with the Council on Foreign Relations and the TC, the Trilateral Commission. Now, of course, and these are structures in place, people. You got to deal with the structures. You got to deal with the structures. Now, according to the National Academy of Sciences, DDT had prevented 500 million deaths. Consequently, the globalists set out to ban the use of DDT, not because it wasn't effective or safe, but because it saved human lives. To these butchers, the preservation of human life is evil. Letting hundreds of millions of people die is good. Let us look at Africa. The Rwanda situation should have sent off alarm bells to the American people. Unfortunately, during those massacres, the WWF and Bart Simpson were also on television. Consequently, little attention was paid by the American masses. The genocide first began in April of 1994. In the early 1990s, the Hutu-led military issued decrees disarming the largely Christian Tutsis. After the Tutsis were disarmed, the Hutus, using machetes, massacred 800,000 Tutsis. People take note, Madeleine Albright insisted the word genocide not be used. This is because such a word must call for trials. American foreign policy did not want that to happen. What is American foreign policy coming from? The State Department, I interject. One must wonder if the American foreign policy establishment really wanted the murder to come to an end before any neighboring African troops intervened, as American troops prevented others from entering in to render medical assistance to the sick and dying. Now the Hutus, after their faithful slaughter, has received millions of dollars in aid from no other source than the U.S. government. What is ignored is that fact the weapon of choice was the machete, a weapon easily outclassed by a single machine gun. The argument that the safety of any intervening troops the primary consideration for denying entry into the ravaged areas, simply lacks credibility. The press, of course, is the faithful and diligent defender of the elite. Took its prescribed role of mute silence, was amiss or remiss in not explaining who and why no one sent help. Time would fail me to discuss the effects of population that the HIV virus had in Africa, where some of the infection rates in African militaries are over 75%. Whether you believe AIDS is man-made or naturally occurring, the effects on population has been the same. Let me ask this question. Since when has having an incurable contagious disease, which just happens to be transmitted through the act of reproduction, been treated like a protected status, where some have even called for special rights? Has this helped curtail or spread the disease? Since when has our society shown such kindness on people whose illness is always fatal? Since when have our leaders been so quick to move to protect the homosexual population, while largely understanding the effects of AIDS in Africa? One factor seems to be increasingly clear. It is Africa that is the target. Resource-rich, beautiful Africa, populated with what Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, called human weeds. That is, black people. The infamous Tuskegee study is another interesting scene in the panorama of American medical experiments. Here, black men were, after being told they were being treated for illness, their illness, syphilis, were deliberately kept from medicines which would cure them, so that doctors could observe the effects of syphilis on men. One must wonder when we will see crematoriums and gas chambers in America. Let us consider the abortion issue. Once again, it coincides completely with the population control agenda. The less people born, the better. This form of murder seems far less objectionable to many Americans because the human life killed has no one to mourn for it, especially when it is its own mother is the butcher. When the abortion issue is raised, it is almost invariably raised in conjunction with the poor, and yes, we have it again, the blacks. The implication here is that these people, according to much of what we hear from many quarters, cannot control themselves. And if more are born, it will just add to the burden of welfare and crime in our societies. Margaret Sanger, who I mentioned before, was the founder of Planned Parenthood. She organized the Black Project. This was designed to eliminate what she believed to be an inferior race of people. The masses of Negroes, particularly from the South, still breed carelessly and disastrously, with the result that the increase among Negroes, even more than among whites, is from that portion of the population least intelligent and fit. Wow, what a statement to make. As you can see, Planned Parenthood has some interesting beginnings that are not generally known for obvious reasons. And let me tell you one thing right now. Senator John Kerry, is a major proponent for Planned Parenthood and abortion. For that reason alone, you better vote for Bush. Sorry to say.
opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
This program on FirstAmendmentRadio.com is much more than entertainment. It is more like an information-packed audio magazine delivered direct to you. Like any magazine, if you don't want to keep getting it, simply unsubscribe by not listening. But you are listening, so now go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there to make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program. Not only should you subscribe for yourself, but you should give extra to help us spread the message of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Don't do Internet? You can also write us. First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, 93274. 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. Thank you. Who are you? That is the question, and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon, and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for broadcast times. We'll see you then. If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, you can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there. Two, you can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. Three, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. And finally, you can call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
Okay, I'm back with the last 28 minutes of the broadcast. Oh, what a relief, huh? Here we see, back to the paper. We'll get back to this other section when we can, and I've moved down to migration because I've just skipped the population reduction agenda to a certain extent. But here we see Oklahoma sends help to Florida. The Oklahoma Health Department deployed two teams Wednesday to the Florida Panhandle to assist in relief efforts in the wake of Hurricane Ivan. They are the first out-of-state public health department teams to respond. Well, how can Oklahoma afford it? But the point of the problem is that we can't get to the bottom of weather modification. We don't know whether these were Soviet creations or creations of our own. I don't know. I don't know. That is the point in the problem. We just don't know. And Gene may turn towards the U.S., this deadly Gene. Now hurricane strength could head back toward the United States and threaten the storm-battered southeast coast, including Florida, as early as this weekend, forecasters have stated. It was too soon to tell where or if Gene would hit. The forecasters at the National Hurricane Center in Miami warn residents from Florida to Maryland, that's right, Florida to Maryland, to watch the storm with 90 mile per hour top sustained winds. Some computer models had Gene carving out are curving out to sea and missing land, but others had it hitting the United States on Saturday or Sunday, forecasters said. Ah, boy. In the meantime, from the Star Tribune, this is dated September 16th of this year, 2004, entitled, BLM Must Look Before It Leases. Out of Gillette, other communities across the West might be spared the same rush to develop coal bed methane that ignited legal fires here, a staff attorney for the Wyoming Outdoor Council said Wednesday. Bruce Pendry was reacting to this week's denial by the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals of a request by Pinnacle Energy Incorporated for a rehearsing of its case against, or a rehearing of its case against the U.S. Department of the Interior over three coal bed methane gas leases on Bureau of Land Management land in the Powder River Basin. Quote, the most important thing that can come of it is not whether leases are coincided or are still valid, in quote, Pendry said. Quote, it's whether the BLM finally comes to grips with and recognizes that coal bed methane has very significant and very unique impacts, and these need to be addressed before fundamental decisions are made, end quote. In a phone interview Tuesday, Pinnacle's spokeswoman Susan Richardson indicated that an appeal of the Tenth Circuit Court's ruling of the U.S. Supreme Court is unlikely, which means that the litigation encompassing some of the most fundamental aspects of coal bed methane gas development may draw to a close. It is unclear now whether the BLM must invalidate possibly hundreds or more leases that were sold in the same fashion as the Pinnacle leases that sparked the lawsuit, according to BLM officials. Oh, I've got a great history with the BLM closing down the desert when I was doing my motorcycle thing in the desert back in 1970s when it started. Oh, man, and I could ramble on about that. Conservation groups have forced the BLM to rescind numerous coal bed methane gas permits in the basin during the past year, pointing out to inadequate analysis of the impacts coal bed methane water might have on the surface. These procedural volleys stem from the ongoing debate or dispute about whether the BLM considered these impacts before it conveyed the right to develop through leasing. BLM's Deputy State Director of Minerals and Lands, Alan Ribbonoff, said last week his agency was anticipating the possibility that the court would not rehear the Pinnacle case without an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. The BLM is left with the Interior Board of Land Appeals' April 2002 declaration that federally owned coal bed methane gas in Wyoming cannot be leased before analysis. Anyway, you get the picture. It's a long article. And you could certainly go and find it yourself from the Star Tribune out of Casper, Wyoming. It's September 16th of this year, if you're so inclined. Ah, boy. Oh, this is very important. As I'm going through some saved emails that I've been saving for you people, I covered in the Wisconsin Report an article about a portion of a community being disarmed, looking for an individual. Well, Dennis sent me this, and thank you very much for sending this to me, Dennis. This comes from Wisconsin, gunowners.org, dated August 6th of this year. Oshkosh police issue statement to clarify their actions in gun confiscation, but muddy up the waters instead. In an embarrassingly misleading August 5th, 2004 press release, the Oshkosh Police Department issued statements by Police Chief David Erickson to clarify the events of the July 17, 2004 shooting of Officer Nate Gallagher. The police were not able to apprehend the shooter, who fled on foot into the neighborhood. But the department's statements only validate property and gun owners' concerns over the door-to-door searches and seizures of weapons that occurred that night. Quote, in the course of the search of his home, several weapons were found. These weapons were secured by our officers, taken from his home, in quote, Chief Erickson wrote. And this was a consent search, according to Erickson. But in the preceding paragraph, police admit, quote, no one saw the shooter, and there was only a general direction as to where the shot came from, end quote. Wisconsin Gun Owners Incorporated, Wisconsin's only no-compromise gun lobby, wants to know on what grounds police initiated searches if they themselves admit that no specific knowledge existed in regards to where the shot came from. Quote, the Fourth Amendment to our Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution, what police are sworn to uphold. Last time I checked, specific exigent circumstances must exist to initiate searches, consenting or by warrant. That wasn't the case here, end quote, said Corey Graff, Executive Director of Wisconsin Gun Owners Incorporated. Graff says that in stark contradiction to citizens' Fourth Amendment protections against unlawful searches and seizures, police did a broad, undefined sweep, scooping up everyone within the area hoping to find a keeper. Equally alarming of the recent police statement is what appears to be an admission, although unintentional, that police pursued a search warrant for a homeowner who, well within his rights, rescinded his consent to the police search after he realized police were stealing his guns. Quote, a weapon was initially recovered from the home, end quote, the press statement said. Quote, however, the homeowner became uncooperative, which is exercising one's rights is being uncooperative, and permission to search is permission to search was rescinded by the homeowner. A search warrant was applied for, received, and subsequent search resulted in evidence being seized, end quote, the report said. WGO, that's Wisconsin Gun Owners, said homeowners were presumed guilty by police for refusing consent to search, which they say undermines both due process and the rule of law. Quote, the Supreme Court has ruled in Manuel versus U.S. 1982 that exercising one's right to refuse a consent search does not give police the burden of proof sufficient to search, Graff said. If it did, we wouldn't have a right to refuse consent to a search, end quote. The press release went on to say that, quote, no other homes were entered, no other weapons were taken, and no one was forced from their homes, end quote. Yet, various media reports from the night in question reported residents giving on-camera statements that contradict the comments of police. Residents said that additional unwarranted searches had taken place, additional weapons were taken, and that families spent the night in local shelters while police combed the neighborhood. Quote, the Oshkosh Police Department is working to ensure the safety of the neighborhood, end quote, the report concludes. But WGO said the police must protect the rights of citizens first. Quote, in our opinion, either the Oshkosh police are completely inept when it comes to citizens' constitutional rights, or they just plain don't respect those rights, end quote, Graff said. Quote, either way, citizens, both gun owners and non-gun owners alike, have reason to be concerned, end quote. The Wisconsin Gun Owners Organization also is asking honorable peace officers who may have witnessed additional abuses during the July 17, 2004 gun confiscation to honor their oath of office by making those abuses public. And that is well received. Thank you, Dennis. Does that clear anything up? Not really. We're still in a messy situation, people. We have the latest Pearl Harbor of 3 years ago that brought about Homeland Security, which was planned for long in advance. People's rights are being taken away. The Constitution should, we know about that story. The executive order dictatorship we live in today, being planned and manipulated for us. Oh, boy. Well, I have so many different directions to take, and certainly I covered this on the shortwave broadcast, but Dewey sent me this. Talking about POWs in America, as you may know, I correspond with several POWs and send them articles from Patriot sources and news articles they may not have access to in the gulag. We're talking about the gulags in America, the Federal Prisons Incorporated. Below is part of a letter I recently received from one of the POWs. I don't want to put the name of this individual in it or state which prison he is in for obvious reasons, but It is a well-known state prison. The point of this being that exposing Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison rot has helped our own prisoners some. And here's what this individual writes to Dewey on September 1st of this year. Good to hear from you, Dewey. And as always, enjoy the articles you sent to me. Read them and pass them on to some friends. I especially like the article on the abuses in the prison in Iraq and the comparison to some of the abuses in prisons here. Interestingly enough, shortly after the Iraq abuses were reported, they started lightening up on abuses here. They started turning the lights off at night and no more strip searches in front of women officers. Oh, God. The insanity of it all, America, as you keep your damn TV sets on, is just incredible. And what is this all about? It's the UN system. We are over there representing the UN system, and nobody knows it because we don't say it. It's just called the Coalition, just like it was called the Allies during the Second World War. It is such a Hegelian deception. And most people don't pay any attention at all to it. It's just beyond me. Beyond me how all this manipulation's been going on and people can't recognize what it's all about, especially when they have the documentation in the U.S. Code stating that the Secretary of the Treasury receives no compensation from the United States. The insanity of it all. The insanity of it all. Let's deal with this one because this is very interestingly funny and ironic. And Lonnie sent me this. Oh, boy. With all that's going on, technology is really incredible with motorcycles and automobiles, except that you have to have a gigantic bank account to afford a vehicle that goes as fast as what a motorcycle goes. According to this article, the Minnesota State Patrol pilot, an aircraft pilot, had been flying near Wabash on Saturday afternoon watching a pair of motorcycles racing each other along U.S. 61. When one of the bikes accelerated dramatically, Loney was ready, clicking his stopwatch, when the cycle reached a white marker painted on the roadside. A quarter-mile marker, he clicked it again. It read 4.39 seconds, which Looney calculated to be an astounding 205 miles per hour. Quote, "I was in total disbelief," Looney said. "I had to double-check my watch because in 27 years, I'd never seen anything move that fast," end quote. The bike was moving nearly twice as fast as Looney's airplane. After about three-quarters of a mile, the biker slowed to about 100 miles per hour and let the other cycle catch up. By then, Loney had radioed ahead to another state trooper, who pulled the two over soon afterwards. The state patrol officer arrested the faster rider, 20-year-old Stillwater resident Samuel Armstrong Tilley, for reckless driving, driving without a motorcycle license, and driving at 140 miles per hour over the posted speed limit of 65 miles an hour. Several law enforcement sources said Tilley might have set the record for the fastest speeding ticket in Minnesota history. No comprehensive records are kept, but a search of speeding tickets written by state troopers who patrol most of the state's highways between 1990 and February 2004 shows that the next fastest ticket was for 150 miles an hour in 1994 in Lake of the Woods County. Tilley, the son of a Washington County Sheriff's deputy, did not return calls to his home Monday. Few vehicles can reach speeds in excess of 200 miles per hour. Only a handful of cars, such as the Dodge Viper, the Porsche Carrera, and several Lamborghinis, can hit the 200-mile-per-hour mark. But many of the so-called crotch rocket motorcycles popular with young men can top 175 miles per hour. With minor modifications, they can top 200 miles per hour. Tilley was riding a Honda 1000, Looney said. State Trooper Steve Strombach, one of the officers who arrested Tilley, said the biker was taking part in the semi-annual Flood Run, a motorcycle rally that started in Hudson, Wisconsin. The ride, in which thousands of bikers participate, raised money for the Gillette Children's Hospital this year. Oh, my God. And here's a little, and you got to lighten it up a little bit, people, or I've got to lighten it up. And this, I appreciate Lonnie sending me this because this gives me a chance to lighten it up on the broadcast tonight. I mean, shoot, I only deal with doom and gloom on a daily basis whenever I'm on. But info from a Minnesota friend, Don Curry, the 205 mile per hour speeding ticket was earned on a Honda RC51. Which has 130 horsepower and a top speed of 170 miles per hour in stock form. And get this, people, Honda sells a racing kit for the bike. Honda will make available to RC51 owners an HRC racing kit, which boosts the bike's output to 170 horsepower while simultaneously dropping its weight to a mere 355 pounds. Ouch. Oh, boy. Honda, pop, 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 ride it just once, back to the shop. That was an old saying from the old days, and I like to use it on occasion, just because it's fun. Oh, where was I? And Lonnie, thank you for sending that. Well worth the visit. The point is, the technology is there from Honda and other Japanese manufacturers. The price is right for people over here to buy them. And these bikes can go real fast, these street bikes. And most of them seem to wear helmets, very intelligent people that do. That's for sure. If you're not wearing a helmet when you ride a motorcycle, you're making an extreme risk on yourself. My head's still numb from my 1977 accident down in Baja. I truly have a numb skull from my right eye socket back to my right ear in my skull. I feel it right now. Whenever I think about it, I feel it. And I was wearing a helmet. Coming from America Patrols, or American Patrols rumor mill, evidently, apparently border watchdog arrested in Sierra Vista, Arizona, on September 21st at 6:10 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. American Patrol has learned that Jack Foote, head of Ranch Rescue, was arrested in Sierra Vista and is being held at the Cochise County Sheriff's Substation. It is unknown on what charges he is being held. And there's there's no more details. And here's Izola Foster, who apparently is Pat Buchanan's running mate. I know about Izola Foster. She's a nice woman. And she says it's a sad day for America when lawmakers side with lawbreakers against law-abiding citizens. That's what she says. Well, gee, it would be a wonderful day if you people would realize the U.N. system is in charge in America. And the State Department implements U.N. directives and directions for the U.S. mission to the United Nations. It's all there on the websites to research for yourself. You have Agenda 21. You have Border 21, part of Agenda 21. Border 21 is galvanizing the U.S. to Mexico to eventually eliminate the borders. You have this international zone. And a certain executive order extended that 62.5-mile area on this side of the border to 150 miles on this side of the border. And Jack Foote, I don't know what to say. I don't know enough about the situation to say anything. It's just that if enough people understood how this is being done in their neighborhoods, like Tim does, enough people might get galvanized enough to work together to stop it. But it takes other people talking on talk shows to educate themselves, to educate others about what this is all about. And after 12 years of UN implementation of Agenda 21, every city in America, I would assume and I would think, has an LA 21, which is local Agenda 21. And here, in many cases, it's called Communities 21. But you're not going to be able to object to what happens to you in the future. You're not going to be able to object if you have the wrong fence on your property and you don't have the money to change that fence. And you'll get fined $200 a day after a certain date if you don't change that fence. Land restrictions and clauses that come into place, you won't have any arbitrary direction to stop it. And that's what we're building up to here in America. You've got to put no trespassing signs in your property to keep people from looking in your pond to see what you have in the way of an endangered species. I mean, come on, people. Am I setting myself up? I don't know. But I have turtles in the pond here. There aren't any turtles anywhere around here. I don't know where they came from, but the turtles in this pond are here and they're growing and multiplying as I feed the fish in the pond. Well, what's going to keep somebody from coming on my property to say, hey, you've got an endangered species on your property. You've got to be careful of what you do. Well, that is the concern everyone should have, whether you have a pond in your property or not. That was a long 2 hours. It'd be nice to hear somebody call in once in a while, but everybody's listening, and that's always been the case since I've been on the air. I hope you appreciate what you're doing or what I'm doing, and I hope